Hello, this is Peter Sellers, the Artistic Director of the Los Angeles Festival. You're about to hear a documentary, One Mind, One Heart, Many Voices, of the 1990 edition of the Los Angeles Festival, which occurred over 2 weeks, 3 weekends, September of 1990. 1,500 artists were in Los Angeles. 900 of them live in Los Angeles. All of them represented about 25 countries. We had 400 performances in 70 locations across the city, parks, gymnasiums, churches, restaurants, the Santa Monica Pier, the Hollywood Bowl, the Music Center, MoCA, LACMA, the big museums, and also tiny little storefront galleries. Basically, it was a chance to have a cultural inundation, a chance to stop and look at what the reality of the new America is, what the demographic reality is, but also what the feeling is going to be of the next century, as we have to advance our idea of what the mainstream is. We really, if you look at the daily life in this city, it's so astoundingly diverse. We live in the first global society here in Los Angeles. 85 languages are spoken at Hollywood High School. And the question is this possible? Can this be sustained, or is it just a social deadlock? Obviously, with the Rodney King incidents of police brutality leading national news stories, the image of Los Angeles as a 24-hour gang war zone of rampant violence of the streets is the image that, in fact, most of its citizens know, because Los Angeles is astoundingly segregated, and most people don't know how to cross over into the lines of another segregated community. The Los Angeles Festival is about a way of trying to find an invitation into East Los Angeles or South Central, a way in which you could visit the Thai Temple for the first time ever. You maybe have driven by it and seen these two golden tongues of flame rising above the freeway between a gas station and two mini malls, but you probably never dared venture in. The abbot of the Thai temple, the spiritual leader of the Thais, all Thais in the Western Hemisphere, invited the city into the Thai temple for this period. It was a very exciting experience of moving across borders. Not only the borders that are officially and unofficially set up within the city, but the borders within your own mind, within your own heart, those things that you told yourself you can never do, those things you feel uncomfortable doing. The Los Angeles Festival was an attempt to capture the mood of festival, a mood in which the world is turned upside down, and a series of things that perhaps might not have been possible are suddenly allowed. And maybe, who knows, with the possibility of a way in, we might actually be able to not just visit, but live there and live together.
Welcome to One Mind, One Heart, Many Voices, the 1990 Los Angeles Festival. I'm Emil Guillermo, and I'll be your host on this journey in sound around the Pacific Rim. Get ready to sit back, relax, and let the waves wash over you. But first, a little history. The 1990 Los Angeles Festival, a multicultural gathering of musicians, dancers, actors, directors, poets, and visual artists such as the world has never seen before. A festival that wants to change the world with art, sending wave upon wave of artistic and cultural information out to the people of the earth from its epicenter in downtown Los Angeles. The festival's organizers, led by visionary director Peter Sellers, believe that the arts can make a difference in the social and political climate of our time. In fact, that the arts must make a difference if the human race is to survive on this planet. And what better place to start changing the world than Los Angeles? A smog-filled sprawl of freeways where commuters pull guns on each other, of gang-infested neighborhoods where young children die in the crossfire of drive-by shootings, a city where white police officers savagely beat a black motorist for all to see later on videotape. And who could forget the nights of rage that set LA's skyline ablaze in the spring of 1992? One click on the remote control, and all is Hollywood glitz and glamour at yet another celebrity party or award ceremony. Most of us who don't live there see and hear about these extremes of behavior so often in the media that our picture of L.A. is painted with nothing but these contrasting extremes. But Los Angeles is much more than that.
San Mateo del Mar, Tecambá. Se está acá presentar en inglés, grupo Los Danzantes.
With 85 languages spoken in the Los Angeles school system, the area is one of the most culturally diverse in the world. American Indian, Mexican, African American, Japanese, Israeli, Chinese, Tongan, Indian, Irish, Armenian, Ethiopian, Korean, Samoan, Guatemalan, Russian, Arab, Persian, Cuban, Italian, Hungarian, Danish, Malaysian, Filipino. The list goes on and on. These are only a few of the more than 100 cultural and ethnic backgrounds that make up the human mosaic that is Los Angeles today. It is this mosaic that the Los Angeles Festival is trying to solidify through the development of intercultural ties. Listen to these words from the festival's program guide. For the next 10 years, the Los Angeles Festival is dedicated to the cultural remapping of Los Angeles, aligning our view of the world to meet present-day realities, the challenge of peace, for instance. Cultural equality is the basis for social and economic equality, and a festival can often be the occasion for business, the arts, and government to come together to address the issues of social movement at the local community and global community levels. As we move further into the age of information, we need a deeper level of information. Information of value, about values, asking questions that need to be asked, and giving us a chance to enter someone's life for 3 hours, someone living 10,000 miles or 10 minutes away, whichever distance is greater. A festival provides an opportunity to watch, listen, have ideas, make friends, make deals, make tracks, and make a difference. And that's exactly what happened in Los Angeles for 18 remarkable days in September 1990. In their welcome message in the program guide, festival directors Peter Sellers and Judith Luther state that we are living on the verge of the Pacific century, that Los Angeles is destined to become the cultural and economic capital of the United States within the next generation. Consequently, 1990's festival, for the most part, looked westward towards the Pacific Ocean and the cultures found on its rim. Artists from what we normally call the Far East, Java, Bali, Cambodia, Korea, the Philippines, Japan, and China, offered a spectacular array of performances from both their ancient traditions and from their contemporary lives. Other inhabitants of the Pacific were represented as well. Aboriginal Australians, islanders from Wallis and Futuna, two barely visible dots on the Pacific map, Maori tribespeople from New Zealand, and hula dancers from indigenous Hawaii, all these and more. But before any of them could perform, they needed to be properly welcomed by the original inhabitants of the eastern side of the Pacific Rim, North and South America.
Welcome all to Los Angeles. Welcome here at Angel's Gate, the Gate of the Angels. That must say that this is heaven. So we are all here together in a type of a paradise in that we are all here joining together our cultures and our arts to try and usher in a new era into the history of the world, the history of America. At a time when the world is questioning many of its values and there are many people in strife in many parts of the world, especially in the Middle East, to have this type of convocation of native peoples from the Western Hemisphere, from the Pacific Ocean Rim, gather together here in culture, art, brother and sisterhood, in order to try and celebrate the fine and wonderful things that human beings are and that we produce is a very fitting statement, I think, to the rest of the world. So I am very humbled and very happy to be here with all of you and to welcome all of you to the city of my home birth, Los Angeles.
Host Paul Apodaca, an American of Navajo and Mexican ancestry and curator of Native American art at the Bowers Museum in Santa Ana, California, presided over a two-hour ceremony in which ensembles from around the Pacific Rim offered gifts of their music and dance to each other and to the assembled audience. The setting for these ceremonies, located 20 miles south of downtown Los Angeles, could hardly have been more majestic. Located in the gentle curve of a grassy amphitheater, high above the Pacific coastline, and blessed with near-perfect sunshine and clear skies, the site offered a natural receptacle where the elements of wind, water, and earth could mix with the spirit of art and culture into an elixir of life. In addition to the gifts of music and dance, more tangible gifts were passed from group to group as well, such as the woomera, an Aboriginal spear-throwing device given by Kenneth Jacobs of the Mornington Island Cultural Team to the Bowers Museum to add to its collection of artifacts from Pacific Rim cultures.
When we go to another tribe, we only carry this woomera. And this woomera means peace. Because if you carry woomera and spear, you're looking for trouble. Yeah. But if you only carry woomera, that means peace. So we're going to give it to Paul to keep in the museum. Thank you.
The atmosphere of the opening day ceremonies was spiritually charged with the presence of Native America. Representatives of California's Gabrielino, Chumash, Kawiya, and Juanino tribes were joined by Alaska's Inupiat and Mexico's Ikuk in welcoming travelers from the other side of the rim. Setting the tone for the day, and in fact for the entire 2 weeks of the festival, was Little Crow, the Lakota Dakota leader of the American Indian Unity Church in Garden Grove, California. Little Crow offered a blessing for us all.
Our blessing will be to the heaven, to the Mother Father Creator, to the earth, the Mother Earth, to the directions of the west, the north, the east, and the south. Umdoji Tukanshala Humbugla. Umdoji Maginaka Se Humbugla. Umdoji Wakayanka Se Humbugla. Umdoji Atekan Humbugla. Umdoji Yampaka Se. Humbugla. Undoje Yampaka. Kagaka. Undoje. Humbugla. Mother, Father, Creator, we thank you for the energy of life that you have put within our bodies. We thank you for the beauty of this day which you have given to us. We thank you for the air which you have provided for our frail lungs to breathe that we might continue upon this dream. We thank you for this land that you have provided for us to stand upon, and for the Mother Earth who has given to us as her children all things which are necessary for us to sustain our life. We ask your blessing upon the energies which have made this day possible. We ask your blessing upon the many hundreds of volunteers who are putting their time and effort and energy into this event, and to all of those who have worked so hard to bring this moment of understanding and unity to pass. We ask your blessing upon the water which surrounds us, for without this gift we cannot survive, we cannot live. We ask your blessing and protection for all of those who have traveled from far places to be with us. We ask that you keep them safe in their journeys while here and as they return to the lands of their homes. We ask your blessing upon the families of all of those who are separated from their homelands at this time. We ask your blessing upon the voices who sing and provide for us the melodies of our heart. We ask your blessing upon those who play the instruments so that the energy too may join into the universe. We ask your blessing upon those who support and who watch, that the breath of life may enjoin us to be strengthened as one. Mother, Father, Creator, have pity upon us. for sometimes we are weak. We ask your blessing upon the abundance which is provided for us in the way of drink and food, the abundance of transportation, the abundance of time and energy which is given to us with each breath. We ask for the oneness of mind and heart in the openness of our consciousness and to the universe into which we belong. Let us give thanks as one mind and one heart as we greet these people who have come to share with us in this great universal event. Let our thoughts be upon peace and the leaders of all nations, that we may come together to speak of peace rather than war. Let us remember in our prayers the mothers and fathers who send their sons and daughters to far-off lands to do things which we should no longer have to do. Mother, Father, Creator, hear our prayers as we pray for the elders who are among us. Bless their lives and strengthen them. For the chiefs and noble people among us, let them be strengthened in their struggles for freedom. For the children who are the present, let them be strengthened and given good life and examples by which to live. And for yet the unborn, let us pray that there will be air and water and trees and life. As in our way, we ask these things not for ourselves, but for all of those who come after us. Mataquiescence, aho.
After all of the gifts were given, welcomes made, and blessings bestowed, the opening ceremony concluded with the ringing of the Korean Peace Bell, a gift to the city of Los Angeles by the Korean government in honor of the 1976 bicentennial. Then it was time for the ensembles to lead the audience down a long, winding path to Point Fermin Park, where performances continued into the night. Listen as these musical currents from the Pacific Rim carry you into the 1990 Los Angeles Festival.
Session begin.
If you thought that some of the rhythms you just heard sounded distinctly non-Pacific and more like rhythms from Africa, you're right. One of the groups in the opening procession performed West African music and dance, only one instance of the broadening of focus that was sometimes necessary for festival organizers to accommodate specific artists they wanted to include in this year's festival. But more about that later. For now, let's move to the host cultures of native North and South America, the Indians.
Thank you.
From the southern Mexican state of Oaxaca came the Ukuk, also known as the Moreños, because of their lives as mariners on the Pacific Ocean. The Ukuk maintain a strong cultural identity through their relationship with the natural powers in their environment, the sea turtle, the swordfish, and the snake. In this dance, they dramatize the exchange between the forces of good and evil with themselves caught in the middle. Evil is portrayed by a character wearing a blonde wig and carrying a machete. Good by a character who carries a bow and arrow, symbolizing lightning, which the Ukuk believe will intervene on their behalf, as it often does when they are in need. Over 4,000 miles north of Oaxaca, near the northwestern tip of North America, and only 150 miles south of the Arctic Circle, lies King Island, former home of the Inupiat. The Inupiat call this tiny mountaintop island in the Bering Sea Ukvak, or place for winter. For thousands of years, it provided a home in which they proved that survival under the most severe weather conditions was not only possible, but could develop into an art form in itself. The Inupiat celebrated the richness of their life with community gatherings featuring dances accompanied by group singing and drumming on their only musical instrument, the frame drum. At these gatherings, stories were told through songs owned by various members of the group and passed through the generations as heirlooms. Stories of great hunts of the past, of family relationships and courtship, and of the many creatures inhabiting the Inupiat's world. Lillian Tiulana.
Our next dance is called the Raven Dance. Some dances were made to imitate the various animals that were common around the island. There are some words in this song that say, "I see you from above while I fly and hover. Where are your friends?"
In the 1960s, the United States Department of Interior ruled King Island unsafe for human habitation and ordered the Inupiat from their ancestral home. Since then, they have lived in Anchorage, Nome, and Fairbanks, Alaska. Although their home was taken from them, their culture has not been lost, thanks largely to the efforts of Paul Tiulana. Mr. Tiulana, along with his wife Clara and several other senior couples, has consistently gathered the Inupiat together to sing, dance, and tell the old stories. He was recognized for his efforts in 1984, when the National Endowment for the Arts presented him with a National Heritage Fellowship as a master folk artist. Oh, The bird songs of the American Southwest are perhaps the first music ever heard on this continent, possibly dating back to the end of the last ice age. They tell of the creation of the universe, the formation of the first people, who were not human, and of their migrations in search for the perfect place to live. When these first people found what they were looking for in what is now Southern California, they settled in, transforming themselves into human beings, animals, birds, into all of the creatures found in nature. According to the songs, they transform themselves in order to fulfill their responsibilities to each other, thereby guaranteeing that life would go on forever. The Cahuilla bird singers from Banning, California, brought songs to the Los Angeles Festival, ranging in subject matter from cosmology to tacos. In many of their songs, they sing about the huge creatures in their prehistoric past. Here's one song about a big snake. You are listening to One Mind, One Heart, Many Voices, the 1990 Los Angeles Festival. I'm Emil Guillermo.
You've all heard of the didgeridoo? Does anybody know how it's made? Who manufactures it? Termites, yeah, that's right. We go and check the trees again, check if they're hollow, cut it off, and there's termites down there. Then we put it in water and rush it through the water, rush water through it. Then we trim it down to shape. When Rainbow suffered and how he broke up into the different essences, the didgeridoo was his voice. The clapsticks that we have were his teeth. The spear was his backbone. The boomerangs that we have was his ribs. So he gave all those things to Aboriginal people a long, long time ago. And Aboriginal people have survived on that land, Australia as they call it now, till the last 200 years. And since the introduction of the white man, we've sort of, some people are losing their culture. But when we go out and travel, we like to show our culture and like to show other Aboriginal people what we should be really like. We should be one as well.
Bye.
dressed in loincloths and grass skirts, their bodies painted with abstract designs in white and in red, the men, women, girls, and boys of the Woomera Mornington Island cultural team brought the dream time to Los Angeles from their home in northern Australia's Gulf of Carpentaria. Like many other indigenous peoples around the world, Aboriginal Australians are involved in the struggle to regain the land that was once theirs, but was taken from them by European settlers. The Aborigines believe that their land and everything on it was created in the dream time, a time and state of being that still exists today. Many of their stories come to them from the dream time and are closely tied to specific places in their environment. The songs and dances that are used to convey these stories are extremely private and can never be performed for outsiders. However, there are public versions of these stories that can be performed outside of a ritual setting. The Woomera team enacted stories about honey gathering, birds, fishing, mermaids, dingoes, wallabies, and rainbow serpent, whose meanness to his sister cost him dearly.
Our next dance is about Tuatu, the rainbow serpent. We believe that the rainbow serpent created everything in Australia, anyway, possibly the world. There's a big serpent or a snake. There's three dances from his story. The first one is about him suffering, how his sister burned him while he was sleeping in his bark hut. She burned him alive, and he traveled suffering all around Mornington Island, and he went up and formed the river where his tongue is at the moment, Dugong River. And while he was traveling up the river, his body broke up into the different essences of life, like the trees, the shells. And he gave all those things that Aboriginal people could survive in Australia for the last 50,000 years. The next one is about his traveling through the water as a porpoise or a black dolphin. The didgeridoo was his voice. And the last one is a shooting star in the sky. When we see a shooting star, we don't look up and say to everybody, "Oh, look, what's that?" We've got to hide our head, because we know when we see a shooting star that somebody's broken traditional law somewhere, and it's a bad thing to do bad thing that happens then. This first dance is about him suffering.
Yeah.
From the nation of Indonesia came the astonishing Children of Bali, 22 musicians and dancers between the ages of 10 and 15, who literally showed that a culture can develop and transmit its artistic traditions through child's play. On the island of Bali, which is about the size of Rhode Island, artistic activity is woven into the fabric of daily life to a degree unsurpassed anywhere in the world. So much so, in fact, that the words art and artist do not even exist in the Balinesian language. Nearly everyone of all ages and occupations is involved in the practice of an art or a craft. Bali is the largest Hindu society outside of India and has been called the land of many temples, where more than 20,000 temples serve the spiritual needs of its 3 million inhabitants. A daily succession of processions, temple festivals, and dance dramas, accompanied by gamelan orchestras like the one you are hearing, provide the people of Bali with a means to engage with each other and with their gods. At the Los Angeles Festival, the Children of Bali clearly demonstrated that this ancient way of living will be alive and well as we cross into the 21st century. One mile to the west of Bali lies the much larger island of Java, home to over half of Indonesia's people. The Javanese are the largest ethnic group in Indonesia and have developed a unique culture that synthesizes elements of Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, and indigenous Javanese beliefs. Their music and dance have developed over the centuries primarily in four royal courts and have had far-reaching influence not only in their own region, but on the world of European classical music as well. When he first heard a Javanese gamelan at the 1889 Paris International Exhibition, Claude Debussy became the first of many Western composers to become captivated by the haunting and hypnotic sounds of gamelan music. No one knows when the first gamelan orchestra came into being. Its name comes from an old Javanese word for hammer, probably because most of its instruments are percussive. It is thought that bronze gongs and drums arrived in Java in about the 3rd century BC, as the Dong Sun culture spread throughout much of Southeast Asia, and before the arrival of Chinese and Indian cultural influences. The 60 artists of the Royal Court of Yogyakarta, Java, presented 10 magical evenings of music, dance, and shadow puppet plays in a specially constructed outdoor pavilion on the grounds of the Los Angeles County Arboretum. In the clear, cool air of a September night, amidst the gentle sounds of nocturnal insects and other creatures, audiences were transported to a time and place which was both ancient and strangely futuristic at the same time. In this dance called the Badaya, 9 female dancers portrayed not only characters from the epic Indian poem, the Mahabharata, but also enacted a philosophical discourse on the conflict between flesh and spirit and the attainment of inner enlightenment. While it is probably true that most of the audience missed the philosophical nuances in the dance, it is equally true that many of them could not help but be swept away as the dancers seemed to float on tiny cushions of air across the stage without actually touching it. From the island of Chindo, off the southern coast of South Korea, came shamans and musicians who filled the sunny courtyard of the Pacific Asia Museum in Pasadena with sounds meant not only to entertain the audience, but to also make contact with dimensions of reality beyond the physical. Dressed almost completely in white, 2 female shamans sang, danced, and beat the drum, while male musicians in broad-brimmed black hats accompanied the shamans on wind, string, and percussion instruments. Koreans believe that sounds rich in overtones are particularly useful in communicating with unseen cosmic dimensions, which they believe can be contacted through a shaman when a person needs help in this world. Even though the object of these shamanic rituals is serious, they are meant to be thoroughly enjoyable. The gathered audience is encouraged to eat, drink, talk, and walk around. In a phrase, to have fun. Our host explained that the food and wine laid out on the ceremonial table is not meant as an object of worship, but as an object of eating. With this in mind, we sat back, listened, and watched as national human treasures from the Republic of South Korea opened up multiple dimensions of time and space through the performance of an ancient art.
Thank you.
From Todd Macover's Towards the Center, heard here in a performance on both acoustic and computer-based hyper-instruments, to the theatrical deconstructions of New York City's Wooster Group, to Chile's El Gran Circo Teatro's play tackling the last 20 troubling years of Chilean history, the North and South American avant-garde was not left out of the Los Angeles Festival. Ornette Coleman, who has consistently changed the shape of jazz in our time, returned to the city where his radical musical ideas first took root in the group that took the clubs of New York by storm in the late 1950s. Along with Charlie Hayden and Billy Higgins, he presented an evening of what to these ears was nearly perfect music at the historic Orpheum Theater in downtown Los Angeles. John Carter, perhaps the most undersung composer and instrumentalist in jazz music today, and who lived almost unknown in Los Angeles for most of his adult life, presented one of the last concerts with his octet at the Japan America Theater. He died the following spring. Peter Sellers' operatic collaboration with John Adams, Nixon in China, played at the Regal Dorothy Chandler Pavilion to an audience dressed in everything from tuxedos and formals to shorts and sandals. On the 16th day of the festival, Long Beach was the site of the Day of Music, where from noon until midnight, a multitude of Los Angeles-based musicians played in clubs and art galleries in styles ranging from funk to chamber music to free jazz and beyond. Vermont's Bread and Puppet Theater presented a series of socio-political plays in locations ranging from a UCLA theater to an airplane hangar. At the Santa Monica Pier, they delighted young and old alike with one of their riotous street theater shows, complete with marching band. The seams that connect some of these avant-garde forms from North and South America to cultures and art forms from other parts of the rim were sometimes virtually invisible, but at other times looked and sounded like a car crash on the Santa Monica Freeway. But that's all part of the Los Angeles Festival. One of its primary goals is to bring together both ancient traditions and contemporary developments from world culture with the work of American artists who have long looked outside of European sources for inspiration and artistic techniques. Whether the connections are smooth and soft or harsh and jarring, the point of the Los Angeles Festival is to show that all cultures are connected in some way and that all people live on one earth. From the snowy mountains of Vermont to the tropical shores of Hawaii is a distance of over 5,000 miles. Yet the performers you just heard playing When the Saints Go Marching In and the ones you are hearing now playing and singing native Hawaiian music are all Americans. The obvious contrast between the two musics points to the extraordinary cultural diversity present in American society today. It also suggests that perhaps we cannot speak of one unified American culture, but instead must use a term like multicultural society when talking about culture in our country. The Los Angeles Festival is asking us to rethink what the word culture means in our society and to ask questions about its social and political implications. The answers we find to questions about culture, race, diversity, and tolerance will likely determine the sustainability of our future as a nation. The group Halau o Kekui was founded by two native Hawaiian sisters, Pu'alani and Nalani Kanakale. Their aim is to preserve the ancient traditional hula dance from Hilo, Hawaii, which was passed down to them through their mother, who in turn received it from her mother. Many of the songs and dances are dedicated to the memory of the people and to the spirit of Pele, the volcanic deity who they believe created the islands now called Hawaii.
Come, bro.
Among the most poignant events of the festival were the performances by the Classical Dance Company of Cambodia, a group that has overcome overwhelming odds in the struggle for its very existence. This group of dancers and musicians, whose ancestors are depicted on the magnificent 900-year-old temples at Angkor, were not spared the genocidal horrors wrought upon the Cambodian people by Pol Pot's Khmer Rouge. In fact, these performers were especially targeted as symbols of the elite art that connected contemporary Cambodia with its traditional religion and royalty. Between 1975 and 1979, when the Khmer Rouge regime was finally toppled by forces from neighboring Vietnam, more than 90% of the company were killed, along with a staggering 1 million other Cambodians. As soon as the Khmer Rouge were pushed into retreat, the remaining artists made their way back to Phnom Penh to pick up the pieces and to start over again from scratch. They had no musical instruments, no costumes, no place to rehearse, nothing but their spirit and their will to survive. The Khmer Rouge, in their attempt to recreate Cambodia in what they called Year Zero, had melted down gongs for saucepans and used wooden instruments as firewood. Only 47 of the performers were still alive. In 1980, the Fine Arts School was founded to begin the process of strengthening the delicate thread that still connected Cambodia with its cultural roots. Priority for admission went to children who had lost their families. 80% of those first students were orphans. The breathtaking performances given by the Classical Dance Company of Cambodia at the Los Angeles Festival provide sublime testimony that the spirit of art and culture can triumph over the forces of war and destruction. Peter Sellers.
The Cambodians are here for artistic reasons, but believe me, the discussion that's generated about Cambodia all around every appearance they make and the way in which the Cambodian community here, because of course we have the largest Cambodian community outside of Cambodia living in Long Beach, but again, almost invisibly, suddenly the larger public becomes aware of this community. And the visit of the Cambodian Dance Company isn't just a visit of a dance company. It's about the United States opening up diplomatic relations with the Cambodian government. It's about whether the Khmer Rouge will be allowed to go back in. It's about a new generation of new Americans who are Cambodians but who are going to live here and the choices they're about to make with their lives. It's about such a range of things besides a dance concert. That it's a dance concert is fantastic, and that it's a dance concert at the highest level is imperative. But culture is not just about itself. Culture is about everything else. That's what makes it so satisfying.
Yeah.
The goal of the Los Angeles Festival, as lofty and impossible as it might seem, is to foster the unification of all of LA's citizens into a peaceful body of humanity through the arts. Woven through every aspect of the festival's activities is the belief that artistic expression of spiritual, social, and political values can foster empathy and tolerance among people of every race and nationality. Central to this belief is the conviction that the arts are now and always have been a carrier of universal human values that sustain us and can even save us as a species. The festival believes, as Little Crow suggested in his opening prayer, that we can and must become one mind and one heart, even though we speak with many voices. In light of current events and the state of race relations in Los Angeles and elsewhere in our nation, this goal has taken on a new and more urgent meaning. As we move toward the next festival in 1993, which will focus on Africa and the Middle East, the Los Angeles Festival's mission has clearly become more challenging. Perhaps the greatest of the challenges before it will be to overcome the fear that many residents of LA feel in the aftermath of the spring 1992 riots. Undoubtedly, many potential audience members will feel reluctant to leave the security of their own neighborhoods to attend events in what seems to them to be alien territory. If the festival is to succeed in uniting the people of LA, its first task must be to get the people to the theaters, to the concert halls, to the galleries and clubs, and to its many outdoor events in LA's streets and parks. Only if the festival can draw the people to itself will it have a chance to work its magic through the arts. And only then will the audiences of Los Angeles have a chance to use the festival as a common ground in which they can interact, connect, and begin building the cultural bridges that must form the cornerstone of the new Los Angeles.
One Mind, One Heart, Many Voices, the 1990 Los Angeles Festival, was written, produced, and recorded by Richard Paskey for Snowcloud Communications in association with KFAI, Minneapolis, WETA, Washington, and KCRW, Santa Monica. The narrator was Emil Guillermo. Thanks to the Minnesota Center for Arts Education and the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. Special thanks to Bill Palladino, Mary Ellen Page, Stephen Nilsson, Jennifer Chung, Peter Stenzel, Miriam Stonehill, Joe Womble, Arturo Garcia, Nancy Rupenthal, Jeffrey Paskey, Julia Carnahan, and the programming staff at American Public Radio. Copyright 1992, Snowcloud Communications. I'm Richard Paskey.